Welcome back to Zillennials Podcast. Today on Zillennials, we have a guest. We have Mark. He's here to talk to us about being a bird dad and all of like what raising a bird entails.
Hello, Zillennials. Thank you so much for having me back. Good to be back.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Okay, so I think that the easiest way to get into this conversation is just kind of chronologically, like, how'd you get your birds? Why'd you get birds?
Sure. So let's see. I got my parakeets back in, I think it was summer of 2017. And they sort of came into my life situationally. I happened to be dating someone that was working at an animal hospital, and I had had a parakeet in the past, so it seemed like a pretty good opportunity to start caring for them again, you know, as an adult as opposed to having one as a family pet. So that sort of got the possibility that I could have one sort of I sat with that for a while and then decided that I would like two, possibly, to see how raising them concurrently would be. And I adopted two at that time.
So what were your parakeets' names?
So their names were, the first was Delphine. She kind of looked like you were looking up at the sky, you know, like a sky blue with patches of white, you know, lovely. And then I picked one who was yellow, kind of chartreuse, and I named her Custard because of her coloration and, you know, also her temperament. She's just so sweet.
I have a logistical question. Did you go in and there's like a room of parakeets and you just picked two? Because I know you mentioned how Delphine was kind of a bully to Custard. So I was just wondering if they were like prepared or like you just picked two and that's how it worked out.
So that's a good question. They had different wings of the adoption center. Wings. We're talking about birds. They had different wings of the adoption center. So the one that the two of them were residing in was full of parakeets. There might have been some cockatiels. And there was also a gray parrot in that room, which is not ready for that level of commitment. But they happened to be in the same cage. And I wasn't the one that picked out Delphine personally, but I think she was picked more on her looks. But I wanted to pick based on their temperament. And Custer, they were in the same cage, and I kind of noticed her just chilling on her perch, doing her thing, and looking a little bit nervous. And I thought, you know, I think that one's for me. That disposition really, I think, suits me.
So I know that Leon had said that they maybe didn't quite get along at first. So did they end up getting along later on, or like, how did that work out?
Yeah, it wasn't quite like they butted heads every time they were in proximity to one another. Most of the time they would kind of just, they'd sit with each other and be totally fine. But Delphine ended up having a bit more of a dominating personality, which I started to pick up on quickly, but I didn't have confirmation of that until I took them to their first vet visit. So I took them in pretty shortly after I got them. And, you know, the vet's making conversation with me and everything's going fine. She weighed Delphine, no issues there. But then she goes to weigh Custard and she didn't even put her on the scale, but she was just holding her in her hand and was immediately able to tell, oh, you know, she feels a little underweight. Does she get enough food? And I was kind of like, I think so. But, you know, Delphine has a tendency to kind of peck at her and make her go away if they're ever at the seed bowl at the same time. And she was like, oh yeah, you should probably have more food accessible to them so she gets bullied less and she can have enough food for herself. And the issue, you know, once I made that change, the issue went away. But yeah, that's when I started to be a little bit more mindful of Delphine's personality.
That kind of reminds me of the fish that we have in Mo's tank. So we have two Harlequin Rasboras, right? We've got Brad and we've got Chad. And Brad is the one who's like kind of aggressive and will like chase the other fish around the tank. Like most of the time he's fine, but other times he's not fine. And I'm like, man, why is it gotta be like that? I think it's just, you know, having pets. Sometimes you'll have one with like a little bit more personality or a little bit more like assertiveness than others.
So Bob and Sam, like, they didn't really have a problem with the assertive dominance issue over each other. I think part of that could have come from they were from a litter of four and they were the two smallest. So like when they were all together, they're like, we have no power over anybody. But they did have the issue, which I think a lot of people have when you have multiple pets, where Bob would inhale his food like a vacuum and then try to go in after Sam's. And so I think, like, no matter, like, what type of animal it is, if you have multiple and you're trying to feed them and make sure that each animal gets enough food, it's, like, kind of harder than you think because they're not going to eat the same.
Yeah, and I think especially if you have them in, like, a confined space, you know what I mean? Because it's, like, you think about it and, like, if they were out in the natural world, like, yeah, you could have food over here that's, like, a far distance away, but I feel like having pets, it's like it's a little different because you normally feed them all in the same spot.
We ended up kind of like Mark, where, you know, he added extra food bowls, is we ended up having to feed Bob and Sam separated by doors. And then once Sam was done, would open the door because like Bob would just eat it too fast and try to eat Sam's. So you can figure it out. But I think it's like the stereotypical, oh, your two pets eat side by side and everything's fine. I feel like that doesn't actually work in the real world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess that is kind of a natural, I guess that response in animals does kind of make sense when they're initially getting acclimated. And it thankfully did kind of balance out over time. They would start to, well, really what happened was whenever Custard saw Delphine eating, she would just absentmindedly go over and eat at her own food bowl. So that issue kind of took care of itself eventually. Though I am a little, and I guess it wouldn't be any different for fish, but for some reason, Kaylee, when you were saying that the fish you have now would kind of get competitive over it, it, for some reason, I was a little bit surprised by that, just to, I don't know, I guess I'm not very experienced with taking care of fish to witness that. What kind did you say they were?
They're Harlequin Rasboras, so they're like a freshwater fish. And like, I feel like normally that's not really the case, because normally I feel like fish, you know, you think they don't have like that much of a personality, but it's kind of interesting because with them, like, we can see it a little bit more.
Has Mo eaten any of them?
No, he's still been very good. We're almost going on a year and he still has not chomped on any of the fish, and they get like really close to him. Like they're comfortable with him and he just like does not care.
Gold star for Mo.
I know. He's a very pacifistic turtle, which is good.
So I know you mentioned the story about bringing them to the vet, and this is the same thing that I asked Kaylee, because I've obviously have had cats, and you can just call up any vet and be like, hey, I have a cat, he needs a vet, cool, you're in. But like, my assumption is you can't just call up your local vet and they take birds. Is that a thing? Do you have to find a special vet?
So I haven't had that much trouble looking for vets that are willing to see budgies. With that said, I've only ever been to two, and one of them was at an animal hospital, so that makes sense. But any vet clinic or hospital that says they have exotic animal care, that's what you want to look for when you're looking for treatment or regular checkups or anything. And again, I think it's... budgies, I think, are pretty common in terms of exotic animals. So I feel fortunate that I've had options. But that's the main thing you want to look for. I was looking into this question a little bit. And there's a website, I think, that has... what was the name of it? I just had it up.
So when you take them to the vet, like what generally speaking happens at the vet? I know that this might be kind of a silly question, but like you said that they weigh them, like what else do they normally do? Like, do they have to give them any sort of medications when you take them? Or like, what is, I guess, standard practice for budgie care?
So the vet visits aren't usually, they're usually pretty quick, to be honest. It'll involve a quick physical examination. They'll usually get their talons clipped because I'm not able to do that on my own. They'll usually do like a, in place of a blood test, they'll usually do like a fecal stain, I think, to see what their body chemistry is like and to detect any potential issues there. So that's usually what it looks like. They'll ask you questions about their diet and exercise, socialization, and usually make diagnoses based on those responses. But in my experience, when something hasn't been visibly apparent that something is wrong, then they're usually fine and there's usually not a huge cause for concern. But I take Custard in once a year, and it's always really interesting to see how deft the vets are at kind of wrangling them in, because I adopted Custard when she was already a few years old, which makes them a little bit more shy when it comes to warming up to a new owner. But on top of that, she can fly, and the parakeets I've had in the past could not. So I often really struggle trying to like get her into a carrying case or, you know, get her to trust me, even though it's an ongoing effort and we've made some progress, but they'll literally just like reach in and snatch them and be like, oh, there you are. And I'm like, oh, she did that so easily.
I feel like it's all about confidence, you know? Like, they know what they're doing. They're like, we're just going for it. Whereas me, I'd be like, I don't want to hurt you. And then, like, birds flying around the cage, avoiding me.
I know.
It's interesting that you say that the ones that you had before couldn't fly and that one can. Because I remember, I think I was talking to, like, this was, like, way back in the day. I think my track coach one time had said that she had, like, a parakeet and it flew away when she was moving. And I was like, oh my gosh, new fear unlocked. I was like, I do not want to have my bird fly away when I'm moving. She was like, yeah, it went up in the tree and it wouldn't come down. Which brings on a question that I had that I was curious about. Like, if your bird ever ran away, would it come back? Or do you think that's something that it wouldn't do? Do you think it'd just be like, and I'm gone?
So I thankfully have not had any experience with this yet. I think it really depends on your bond with the bird, possibly. And I think there are other factors at play, too. I feel like if Custard did escape, I feel like she personally wouldn't stray too far from where we are, especially because my room has a radiator and it's been really cold out recently. So I think it'd be in her best interest not to go too far from where we live. But yeah, I honestly, I don't know. I think you just gotta work towards building a lot of trust with them. And that, you know, takes time and effort, of course. But I think parakeets are, in my experience, they can be pretty skittish. So the actions that can, like, affect their trust in you, I feel like something small, like, I don't know, even reaching for them too quickly might alter it more significantly than you would expect, even if it's something absent-minded. So I don't know. I hope I don't ever have to find out that story. Yeah, thankfully, when I did move, you know, Custard did stay put, but oh man, I feel really sorry for your track coach, was it?
Yeah. I think she might have eventually gotten him down, but I don't know. She said that he was like up in a tree for a while, and I was like, oh no. So I'm glad that it seems like none of your birds have ever escaped. That I think would be like one of my biggest fears, especially like if your birds can fly. I feel like that's something that's like you got to make sure you're like extra, extra careful.
Definitely. The closest experience I can think of, though, was, again, the first time I took them to the vet, their old cage had like a pretty big door that you could just leave open for them to fly out. So I was reaching around for them, and my old apartment had a really tall ceiling and a skylight. So they, I think I was reaching for Custard because she would be the easier to grab of the two. And then Delphine flew up and like, it, like made a beeline for the skylight in our ceiling. And I'm like, oh my goodness, no, come back. So I was scrambling pretty early that morning. And then, of course, Custard made her way toward it and did the same thing. But I got him eventually. But thankfully, that was in a contained area. And they didn't make it too far. They actually lost steam rather quickly. So I kind of just picked him back up.
Question. Because I know with Bob and Sam, because we would just put them in the same carrier. And when we were trying to take them to the vet, like, they would not go in it, right? Especially Bob. So you'd have to kind of like shove them in it gently, of course, but you know, with encouragement. But then it was like the thing when they were at the vet and he would just like put all four paws out and just like would not move. And then they would have to like take the carrier and tip it and like gently shake them out. Do birds do that same thing? Or is it just because the vet can like just reach in and grab them? It's not an issue getting them out.
I think it's more of the latter where it's not really an issue because they have the confidence to just like, just snatch them from the carrier. I really gotta get some of that confidence and be like, come on, Custard. Come on, come outside. You know you want to.
You know you want to go to the vet, Custard.
Yeah. But the vets I've had really love Custard because she, I think she throws in the towel pretty easily once she's been captured. So they'll always say things like, oh, she's so sweet, you know, an angel, she wouldn't hurt a fly. And I mean, they're not wrong. She kind of keeps, she's a pretty gentle creature. But thankfully, in terms of, she doesn't put out a lot of resistance when she is at the vet. So my experience has usually been pretty quick and painless when I do bring them in.
So then on the daily, what does bird care look like? Like, how often do you need to refill their food, their water, etc.?
I usually check their food and water levels daily, and then I'll aim to clean her cage once or twice a week. I usually make sure that they have access to good amounts of seed, millet as a treat, and some fresh produce as well to make sure she's getting a well-rounded diet. But if she has like a full dish of seed, that might last her a couple days, so you just got to be wary of that. But they're less prone to drinking water because they're native to the desert, which concerned me at first when I got them because I had them for a couple weeks and I didn't see them get water at all. But I guess that was pretty common, and they're able to go on small amounts, and that will sustain them for a pretty good period of time. So I'll check their food and water levels, and if I'm working in the office, then I won't see Custard for a few hours. But on the days that I work from home, I'll usually be like chatting with her just to, you know, kind of keep her entertained. I'll have music on, so you know, there's sound and she's a little bit engaged in her surroundings. She does love, she loves Zoom meetings. So, which is like, you know, a pro and a con, because they always happen when I'm working. But my coworkers always find it really funny to hear her chirp up with any groundbreaking points that she has to make during meetings. And I mentioned earlier that I've had some trouble hand training her. She's just very skittish, and that's been an ongoing struggle since I got her. But in place of like the exercise that she could get by flying around the room, I go through periods of keeping her cage door open so she has the option to go out and explore, which she rarely does, but that's okay. But I'll in place of that, I'll, in the warm weather, I'll like bring her out, her cage out in the porch with me to like, while I'm reading a book or something, just so she has, you know, fresh air and a change of surroundings and that type of thing. And then when she's ready for bed, blanket over the cage and she's out for the night. So that's pretty much how a day looks.
I bet you that she loves that change of surrounding. I know with Mo, sometimes we'll like take Mo to go and look at various things around the room. So like the other day we showed him the Christmas tree and he was like amazed for a whole minute. And then he was like, okay, now I want to go back in my my tank. I'm done. And I think we also showed him snow the other day. He was like astounded. He was like, what is this? So I definitely feel you on the changing the surrounding. I think it's definitely a good thing to help stimulate your pets.
That's why I took the Bob and Sam out on leashes. Bob wasn't as into it. He was kind of more like Mo, where he'd be like, okay, this is cool. And then like a couple minutes, 5 minutes later, he's like, I'm good. I'm going to go back inside. But then like Sam would just be out for hours if he could. But it's good to give him some stimulation because I feel like we want that if we're inside the house too long.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I really want to do with Mo is I really want to like take him to either like a forest preserve or maybe like to my parents' house, like someplace where I know that there's not going to be like a lot of like pesticides sprayed, etc., and just like let him walk around because like he's never had that experience and I feel like that's an experience he should have.
No, that makes a lot of sense. How does Mo typically engage with his surroundings? Is he naturally pretty curious or does he need some warming up before he does his thing?
I feel like it's like 50-50. He's a water turtle, so a lot of the times he's in the water, but obviously like I'm not going to go and put him in a big body of water because he would totally swim away and I'd never see him again. But I feel like, you know, I feel like going on the grass or something would be like a beneficial activity. I feel like he'd be very curious about it.
Yeah, let him roam around.
So I know you mentioned that you would get custard produce. What's her favorite vegetable or fruit?
Let's see. It's not, not a particularly exciting answer, but she does love just like leafy greens that I would have on hand for a salad. I think in large part it's because she's the least skeptical of that. I try giving her, you know, options and varying the fresh food that I give her, but I think it can't be anything too foreign to her because she'll pretend it doesn't exist. But she likes those. I've given her some clementines before, which she's shown interest in, and tiny pieces of apple. But she likes the leafy greens, the lettuces, and she's had some arugula once. That was adventurous of her. But yeah, I'm waiting for her to take a bit more to like the things like berries and I don't know. Just gotta keep broadening her horizons just so she's not only eating seed, which many birds do, but I don't think it's ideal for them to just be, or I know it's not ideal for them to just be eating that, so gotta keep the options open and get her out of her comfort zone a little bit.
So as someone who has a bird in an apartment, would you say that birds are well suited to apartment life? Would you say it'd be nicer if you like had a house to put them in? And then also, what sort of materials would you need to get started if you were to go and get a bird like, say, today?
So I think for parakeets specifically, they are pretty well suited to apartment life. And they're generally pretty low maintenance birds, so they don't need a ton of space so long as, you know, you can provide them with entertainment and some exercise and changes of scenery. In terms of things you would need for getting started today, you really don't need a ton outside of what you generally associate with having a bird as a house pet. So that would be a cage, a good size cage, ideally, some perches for them to sit on, of varying size, a few toys, some seed, millet, and food to keep them fed and healthy. And then there are a couple supplementary items that generally improve their life quality, like they sell these cuttle bones, which they nibble at them which helps keeps their beaks down to size, and I think provides them some minerals as well. And also something, this is a random one, but something to line the bottom of their cage with. When my family had our parakeet, we used to line the cage with newspaper because, you know, you could just put it down. It's easy to replace when the cage needs cleaning. And I started doing that when I first adopted them, but we later found out that they wouldn't go to the bottom of their cage because I think they were confused by the text on it. So I switched to paper towel since then. But I think those are the basics. I don't have a bird bath for them at this moment, but they do love taking baths. So that'd be like a nice bonus item to include if possible.
Ooh, I didn't even think of that one. That's a good one.
This is like kind of not related, but related to what you said earlier. So you know how you're like, you throw the cover over her cage and she goes to bed?
Mm-hmm.
One, does she just sleep on her perch? And then two, does she sleep for a chunk of hours and then wake up in the morning?
Yeah, I try to keep her routine as consistent as I can. But yeah, she's always associated. I'll put the cover on her cage when she needs to go to sleep, but also if I need her to be quiet for a short period of time. But she generally, whenever I cover her cage, I don't hear a peep from her, so I assume that she connects that it's time to sleep. And when she does sleep, it's usually on her perch and on one leg, and they have this very specific look where they like kind of turn their heads back and rest on their backs, and their feathers are puffed out a little bit, and it's very adorable to witness. But yeah, she'll just be chilling in there until the morning.
That's so cute. So Kaylee, do you put Mo to bed? Because I feel like when you have a cat, you don't really put them to bed. They just kind of go wherever they want and sleep whenever they want.
No, we don't put Mo to bed. Mo just kind of goes and falls asleep on his own. But one thing that he's been doing lately, which at first kind of freaked us out, was sometimes around like 6 p.m., so like kind of early, right? He would just go and he'd like put sand on his shell and he'd just fall asleep under the water. And like with baby turtles, there's a big risk of drowning. And so we were like, oh my gosh, he's gonna drown. But no, he's been fine. He just comes up for air whenever he needs it. And I'm like, all right, I guess it's okay. If that's what you like to do, I guess it's natural. So okay, sounds good. But no, he just goes to sleep whenever. Like sometimes the lights will still be on out there and he'll be like asleep.
The life of a pet.
I know. They have it so good.
I know. Wait, oh, I did have another question. Do people ever get like perches to put around their room for when they like open up the door and like let their birds fly around?
Yes, they do, but they sometimes just find places that they like to perch on their own. When my family had our parakeet, Bing, one place that he couldn't fly, but one place that he loved to sit was like on top of curtain rods, so he could look out the window and see all the goings on in the neighborhood. So they're pretty good, I think, at finding pretty natural perches where they can just feel pretty comfortable. And I think Custard, she's had sort of a different journey with that, let's say. But when I was at my last apartment, the few times that she did go out of her cage, the one perch that she really enjoyed going to was the very thick power cable that connected my AC to the power source. So it kind of like, it like dipped a little bit and she would just sit right at the bottom of it, which I was like, oh, I was not expecting that, but it makes a lot of sense. You fit right on there.
So question kind of related to that is, if you let your bird out to just enjoy his life around your house, how do you make sure he doesn't poop all over your house?
Well, he will poop all over your house.
Okay. So it's not like he's house trained and will fly back into his, like, cage.
No, it kind of, when it happens, but the...
Good to know.
Yeah. But honestly, it's very manageable to take care of. You kind of just, like, pick it up with a paper towel and you're good to go. The bigger mess, honestly, is her feathers. They get absolutely everywhere. And they float around and, like, they'll get into my clothes and stuff, which is, like, I'll sometimes, like, find one during the workday. And I'll be like, aw, custard. But they can be very, they can just get annoying to, like, sweep up. And if she's shedding a lot, then that's when it can start to be a little bit messy. But, yeah, unfortunately, she isn't house trained in such a way. You kind of just run that risk whenever you take her out. Although with Bing, my family's bird, she would usually have dedicated areas and, like, playpens that we would just line with paper towels so we could just, like, wrap it up and take care of it. But otherwise, it's, yeah, you kind of just, it's a risky run for sure.
I think it's so funny. I never thought of bird shedding because I feel like people with cats and dogs or anything furry are always like, oh, it's all over my clothes. I never thought about the feathers being all over your clothes.
Yeah, and you don't think, it's something you don't really think about until you have to experience it yourself. And you're like, oh my gosh, I did not realize how many feathers these birds are capable of producing. When does it stop? Yeah. But it always makes me smile seeing them end up, like, in random places. Like, there's been multiple experiences where I'll find them, like, in my work backpack or in places that you at least expect them. So I'm never mad to see it. It's just an adjustment at first.
So what would you say is your favorite thing about having a bird?
My favorite thing about having a bird, I think it's really, I love seeing the array of their personalities, and I just think they're very adorable and a little bit goofy, and it's always just, it makes me smile witnessing that and just seeing their little quirks on a day-to-day basis. I find it really interesting to see the things that Custer likes reacting to and things that catch her interest, and they do make really good companions, and I think they're increasing in popularity, but still underrated as pets. And I think I would definitely, yeah, I've definitely thought of adopting more in the future, but it'll probably be at a time where I have a bit more space and feel like I can give them more individualized attention. But yeah, there's lots of things to love about them. But I just love seeing their personalities and how they interact with the world around them.
So I think something we've asked on all of our pet-themed episodes is, like, who do you think is, like, the ideal person to get a bird? You know, like, what is the setup that you would need to have? Like, if someone's thinking, I want a bird, but, like, I don't know if I have the right environment or stage of life or whatever. Are they good for everybody?
I'm trying to think of who they would be not good for. And I feel like they are pretty well suited to a lot of different lifestyles, as long as you're willing to give them attention and care, some exercise. And I think anyone that's willing to put an effort to build that kind of bond with them are pretty, I don't see any reason why they wouldn't be great owners for them. Yeah, I think they make pretty good introductory pets because they're not super high maintenance, but they can also be really great companions, and you can get them to, you can even teach them tricks, and some of them are able to talk. I don't really understand the mechanics of that. I just know that mine have not been able to so far, even though I've tried. But yeah, they're definitely great, like, first-time pets, and even for experienced pet owners. I will say, though, I would be wary if you already own other animals, because I've had Custard around. She's okay around dogs because they don't really notice her. I haven't had her in a household with cats, but I think that would be a little bit, I don't know if the dynamic would be the same there. I feel like that might be a little bit more volatile. So that would probably be one I would avoid. But otherwise, if you want one, I say go for it, because I think you'd be surprised at what a good pet they can be.
About how long do they live? Like, is it like 15 years or is it like longer than that?
I think the range is generally like 7 years to 12 or 15 tops, I would say. When I adopted Delphine and Custard, they had limited information about their history, which was unfortunate but not surprising. So they estimated them to be 2 or 3 years old, but they couldn't really tell officially. And Delphine died a couple years ago, so she would have been like 6 or 7, which makes, I can do math, I swear. Let's see, 2 or 3. So that would make Custard 7 or 8 now, which is, that makes her a senior lady currently. But, you know, she's still going strong and she's having a great time, and so am I.
I love it.
So yeah, like 7 to 12 years to answer your question is their general lifespan.
See, I was always curious about it because I know that some people said that like some birds have lifespans that are like 30, 40 years, like if they're larger birds. And so I was like, I don't know, like how long is the lifespan of like a parakeet? Because I don't know, you know?
It can get kind of crazy how long some birds can live. I made a note about there being a gray parrot when I first adopted Delphine and Custard. And we got some backstory on, she was like that type of parrot that you would expect, like, to be sitting on a pirate's shoulder or something. Pretty, a good size, like a foot tall, gorgeous. But she was up for adoption because she outlived her previous owner and still had, like, she was expected to live at least in another 50 years, which I just thought was, that blew my mind to find out.
That's crazy.
Yeah. It's, yeah, so they can really, I think their lifespan clearly can range from 7 to 12 years to an infinite amount, apparently.
Whenever you're considering getting a pet, it's a good idea to look into how long it's going to live, because you need to plan for that.
Could not agree more. Yes. Yeah, I guess the only thing I would throw in is if you're interested in getting a bird, make sure you're informed when you, if there's one that you're interested in, make sure you have as much background information on the supplier or the specific bird as you can. In my experience, it was easier to start with a bird that couldn't fly at first, but I think people's experience can vary on that. But yeah, just be informed when you go to get them. And as long as you have a good attitude and you're making sure they're comfortable, I say go for it.
So our next book club is going to be The Paris Bookseller by Carrie Maher, and that will be dropping on March 6th.
We hope you enjoyed our discussion on birds with our guest, Mark. If you enjoyed this episode, we'd love to hear from you. You can send us an email or DM us on Instagram. We'd also love to hear if you have a pet that you would like to talk about that we haven't talked about yet. We want to expand this series, but I think we're both kind of running out of people that we know with pets. So feel free to let us know. And then don't forget to rate and review Zillennials Podcast on Apple Podcasts. You can find us at Zillennials Podcast on Instagram or email us at zillennialspodcast@gmail.com. Feel free to hit the subscribe button and stay a while.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.